Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. Yes, I said animation and not anime, because we do cover all sorts of other things, including live action stuff. Live action adaptations are a thing, you know. Today we've got a doozy. My name is Rob, and joining me today are Mark.
Hello.
And Tucky.
Hello.
That was awful quiet of you, Tucky. Anyway, how are you guys this week?
Alright.
I'm alright, drinking whiskey at the moment, so I'll get slightly drunk as things go on.
Are you going to play your drinking game?
I don't have Monster Muscle in front of us, so I can't do that. There's drink going into us, and I've been gluing some wigs, so there's glue in the air, so I'm kind of getting a double whammy of getting high at the moment.
Okay, I am confused. You're drinking and you're gluing wigs. Where are you gluing the wigs?
Well, I was doing that before we started.
That doesn't answer my question.
On the floor! That raises more questions!
They've got to be glue, it's just like a spray, so it just kind of goes in the air.
So where are the wigs being glued?
On the floor, next to us.
Why?
He's actually gluing them to the floor, so the carpet isn't getting its own carpet.
No, there is no carpet. This is the only room in the house that doesn't have a carpet. We've got wood flooring, so that's why I'm gluing in here.
Hang on, could you not afford carpet for that room that you have to use wigs? And isn't that just more expensive than carpet?
Yeah, but it's fancy.
It's a fancy wig. It's a blackjack wig.
Why are you using the blackjack wig as a carpet?
But not. It's going to be used on my head. It's going to be a head carpet.
I'm confused. Tucky, help.
Hello, viewers, you're listening to an animation podcast.
The notes anime, there's been mention of wigs and blackjack.
Mark suddenly took a sharp left turn there and just went off into the distance, and I'm just running to catch up.
Oh, dear.
So news.
Yes, news.
What's some news?
Yes. Reboot?
Just reboot.
Yeah, just reboot. Reboot's getting a reboot. In fact, it has a reboot.
Live-action reboot.
Yeah, we knew it was coming. And what do you guys think? Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
See, that was my reaction as well. I just looked at it and thought, oh my god, they Power Rangered it.
There's a lot of Power Rangers. It's like a crap VR Troopers. Remember VR Troopers?
Yes, I do.
It's like a crapper version of that. And the thing is, like, you've moved on. You've got so much more technology. You could have made Bob, like, bring Bob back and make him better. But no, we're going to have four live-action doofuses trying to defeat Gigabyte or Megabyte or whatever kind of bite he is.
He's Megabyte, but he doesn't serve pizzas or fried chicken.
Is he just Gigabyte? Because that's not really a high amount now. Is he going to get is he going to get taken over by Terabyte?
No.
That's the thing. He evolves. It's kind of like Goku's Ultra Instinct. He just becomes Terabyte.
No, can you imagine, though, if Terabyte was actually a twin and Terabyte was the one who was always angry because his older brother got all the attention from their parent. But, you know, his older brother was just... He had issues, you know. He had mental health issues and he was challenged. And so he got all the parental love, and Megabyte had to try harder than his brother Teraflop. Sorry, Terabyte had to try harder than his brother Teraflop.
But are they going to continue it? Are they going to have petabytes?
No, because then you're inviting animal rights activists in.
Well, then there's exabytes, or zetabytes, or yottabytes.
Are you just making up words now?
No.
This is actually a genuine thing. I've Googled it.
It is, but the yottabytes always made me think of Yoda. And I always wanted them to change it to yottabytes.
It sounds like it's getting more weeby as it goes along.
Ninja bites.
Well, this is supposed to be a live-action CGI kind of mix-match thing, isn't it?
It is.
It kind of is, but it's... after seeing Jumanji, like the reboot... Is it a reboot or is it a sequel? Jumanji, anyway. After seeing Jumanji, where it's like four kids transported like through technology. And the thing is, like in this preview for reboot, they have the main bad guy is just some sweaty, slightly unshaven adult who laughs a lot and thinks he's a hacker.
All I can say...
Like a prop...
Yeah.
I type on the keys fast. I bet you think I'm a hacker.
Is it going to be like that episode of NCIS where they're both typing on the same keyboard?
Yeah.
Borrow some GoldenEye.
Because that's how hacking works. I love that episode of NCIS. It's like, we don't know how technology works. Let's just do this because it looks cool.
I usually do that, though. I usually use public library computers. Just tap on the keyboard, like lightly tap, so it makes a click sound, but you're not actually pressing anything. And everybody in the room turns around and looks at you as if you're, like, taking down a government satellite or something.
I was like, when people who don't really use technology or computers see people who can touch type, it's like, oh my god, you can touch type, you're going to overthrow us all.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, I learned how to touch type years ago, but if you don't keep practicing, you lose the ability. It's one of those weird things like that. It's not like riding a bike. Because your finger muscles, you know, your muscle memory and your finger muscles, they remember how to do these things. So I've got a vague idea. I can, you know, and after a bit, I can touch type to a degree. But I wouldn't say I was anywhere near as good as some of these people who do it like day in, day out and do like 100 words a minute. And I'm like, how the hell do you do 100 words a minute?
It all depends on how much you actually have to type, really. I mean, I have to type quite often when I'm at work. So it's quite good.
Could you
back in my fan fiction days, I mean, about 10 years ago, that's how I learned to touch type.
Could you do 100 words a minute, though, Mark?
Emphasise on the touch type.
Well, that's how you made a living back in them days.
What, were you the touch type, Mark?
Oh, God, this has got all Violet Evergarden.
What, you mean kind of creepy and weird? anyway, yeah, reboot. Ready Player One, this is not.
No, it doesn't have Gundam.
It doesn't have giant robot. It doesn't have the Iron Giant. It doesn't have anything.
Who is this for? I mean, reboot. Years ago, it was a big series back, like 1994, when it first came out. And it was quite an important series. I mean, it was one of those first CGI-only series.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those series that was conceived back, like, about 15 years before it even came out. And it was that far advanced that the technology couldn't even do it. But who is this series for? Because, let's face it, in this day and age, the people who grew up with Reboot can watch Reboot.
This is the big problem with nostalgia. Everything is viewed through rose-tinted lenses, and Reboot was not a good series. And the main reason I can say that is because when it came out, I was an adult, and I could actually process the fact that it wasn't a great series. But when you're a kid, it's amazing. And so
I was a kid when it grew up, and I was just like, this is the future!
Yeah, but this is the thing. You look at it when you're a kid, and when you're an adult, you remember it. And you go, oh, it was so amazing when I was a kid. And you want to try and recapture that childhood fascination, that magic, because, I don't know, your life isn't going as well as maybe it should have or the way you imagined it. You might be stuck in a job that you don't like. Your relationships might not be going so well. Your studies might not be going so well. Whatever the reason, and you want to return to that childhood wonder. And so,
that's everyone in Britain right now.
That's everyone in the world right now. We, you know, we have Trump in America, and I'm not even going to go with what that signifies. But the problem with nostalgia is that in trying to recapture that, we open the door to all sorts of really awful, awful ideas. And a reboot is a bad idea. In the same way that a Sonic feature film is a bad idea.
I knew there was something else.
Segwayed, lads. Segwayed. Fantastic. That's it for Segway of the Year. That's a front runner.
I hope literally. You like it. I'm standing here taking bows.
Oh, dear. Oh, so, yeah, there's a Sonic reboot, and as expected, the Sonic fandom are getting all...
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Spirit.
Tim Miller, the director of Deadpool, has signed on as executive producer. And the director...
So if we're saying Indians and Mario, we're going to see Deadpool and Sonic. Yeah.
Thing is, he's bringing Jeff Fowler. His previous work includes the Oscar-nominated short Gopher Broke. Jeff Fowler is going to direct it, and it's basically going to be a combination of live-action footage and computer-generated animation, so it's going to basically be Smurfs. Right.
Well, the one people are likening it to is the Detective Pikachu one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's because saying Smurfs in the same sentence as Sonic is likely to upset the Sonic fans. But let's be fair,
Well, considering the Sonic fans have already, like, raised a celebration and claimed it's going to be the best film ever.
They can say that as much as they want, but it's going to be, as you said, Tucky, and we know this, it's going to be Mario versus Sonic. It's basically returning to the 90s Mario versus Sonic. It's the battle of the century.
I thought Brexit was supposed to stop things like this.
See, I kind of think Mario versus Sonic, but let's face it, Mario's kind of on a different level than Sonic this day and age. I mean, fair enough, if they put the fans in charge of Sonic, like they did with, was it Sonic Forces? Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
Sonic Mania.
That I reviewed. Yeah, brilliant. If Sega's got any touch with it, oh dear God. Have you never played Sonic 06? Oh God.
Sonic did Sonic, what to the princess?
Sonic 06, Sonic falls in love, vice versa. Human falls in love with Sonic.
Oh man, we're back on bestiality again, aren't we?
Hang on, did Tumblr get hold of Sonic?
Yes.
Yes.
Rugged neck.
I hope the fan characters get in for the film. That would be brilliant.
I'll tell you what they've got to do. If they're adding live action, whoever's running the Twitter account for Sonic the Hedgehog, he has to, or she has to have a cameo somewhere in it.
Well,
because it's the man just for like years of like amazing work.
Here's the thing. Now, we actually had this news not from a news site. We actually received a press release from Sega about this. And I'm just going to read some bits of the press release to you because it's a wonder.
Oh, God, it's Sega.
Yeah, it's Sega and Paramount Pictures. And they're co-producing the Sonic the Hedgehog feature film. This movie represents an important next step in the expansion of the Sonic the Hedgehog IP, bringing the character to new audiences globally. As part of the IP strategy for Sonic the Hedgehog, Sega Group has been working to expand this character beyond the video game market to become an entertainment franchise. Recently, Sonic has appeared as an animated character on television, consumer products, console and mobile games, and more. He's been doing that for years!
Yeah! I just realised something.
Yeah?
Sonic is the whore of the gaming world.
And Mario isn't?
He only did Wreck-It Ralph once.
if you look back, like, Sega kind of throws Sonic at anybody who's willing to give him it. Him anything.
Mario is exactly the same. Even the Japanese Prime Minister dressed up as Mario for the bloody Olympics.
Oh, yeah, but let's face it, Mario has a little bit of a slightly better track record than Sonic does, doesn't he?
See, Mario claims to love Peach, but Mario's had more men having a go at him than anybody else.
Yeah, well, let's face it, Peach is more interested in Bowser anyway, isn't she?
Yeah, we don't go there.
I mean, Sega's desperately trying to stay relevant in this day and age. I mean, I love Valkyria Chronicles. Not Valkyria Chronicles. I love Valkyria Chronicles. Yakuza, I heard, is always good. But a lot of their other IPs kind of aren't doing much, and I kind of feel like they're kind of trying to flog Sonic to whoever will have them, including film. Honestly, I don't think I'm going to see much on this. Personally, like I said in the Sonic Mania review we did on YouTube, I didn't grow up with Sonic. I was a Nintendo guy, which maybe make me a bit more biased, but I kind of feel like Sonic's had its time in the limelight, and it's time for them to kind of step back a little bit with it.
Yeah, but so is Mario, let's be fair. I mean, Mario, my God, every single Mario game is the same as the last Mario game.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the Mario games for what they are. I mean, Sonic Mania.
The newest Mario game, thing is, Nintendo is good for innovation, and I really want them to innovate. I don't mind them producing a Mario game every now and then. I'm not going to deny them bringing out a Mario game, but don't bring one out every 3 or 4 months, because that's the actual... If you look at Mario games, right, the frequency of Mario games at one point for Nintendo was literally like once every 4 or 5 months was a new Mario game.
Is this Mario as in proper Mario, or is this Mario as in Mario Kart, Mario Tennis, Mario Party?
Something based around
taxes.
Yeah.
Mario's got Sonic cornered in the corner right now, and oh my God, what the hell is Mario doing to Sonic? Jesus Christ.
He's basically going for his Olympic ring.
Why did you not have Sonic and Mario at the Olympic things? They could have both danced together and done Yuri on Ice.
No. Whereas having like lots of time on my hands, I've been sitting watching the Winter Olympics, and the Japanese women's curling team is absolutely precious and must be protected at all costs.
They lost to South Korea.
Yeah, I know, but they must be protected.
I like how even Shonen Jump was getting in and seeing Yavir. What character from an anime or manga would be best suited to curling?
What?
Bonus points if you get a character as the curling Ebstone. That was a legit question Shonen Jump was asking us.
Need to be near the Olympics. I've already got enough sports anime.
But Tucky, don't you know, because of the success of the Japanese women's curling team, there is soon going to be, and you can be bloody guaranteed it's going to happen, there's soon going to be a gripping, thrilling manga about the all-action sport of curling.
I don't care how much they try to sex it up. It's not entertaining. It's not interesting. It's like that time when they looked at ballroom dancing and went, you know what? That'll make a great anime.
Hey, the manga's good.
Those are famous last words.
Moving onwards, we've got other news, I think.
Yeah, we do have other news. Goblin Slayer is getting an anime. And,
woo!
I have more hope for them not to screw this up. I have a lot more hope for them not to screw this up because, number one, it's not a well-known title and they're going straight for the light novel rather than the manga. Yeah? Which is what they didn't do with Knights of Magic, let's be fair. They said they did. They said they were going off the light novel, but did they? Hell. Number two, it's a proper dyed-in-the-wool fantasy. It's not transported to another world. It's not reincarnation. It's not any of that nonsense. It's basically a guy who's very good at killing goblins. The clue is in the title. Ooh. And that's basically all he does is kill goblins. It has dungeons and it has guilds and stuff like that. So all the traditional trappings of a Japanese-style Western fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a Japanese Western-style fantasy, I should say. So it has the guilds and it doesn't have level systems or anything like that. Goblins are basically a pestilence on society. They appear at random, they appear everywhere, they attack, they rape women, everything like that. It's very violent, very dark, very brutal. And Goblin Slayer is basically somebody who kills goblins, and only goblins. He doesn't go after orcs, he doesn't go after ogres, he doesn't go after dragons or anything like that. And the different races actually have a name for him. He's famous because he only kills goblins.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the first light novel lying on my desk ready to read, and I'm quite excited because you've really hyped this up.
Well, I mean, you've got, like, the dwarves call him, if I remember rightly, the dwarves' name for him is Beard Cutter, because for dwarves, cutting the beard is the same as cutting someone's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the elves call him Orkbolg.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't kill orcs, but they call him Orkbolg because they reckon he's so powerful he could kill orcs. And the various races all have names for him. The goblins actually have a name for him as well, and they're terrified of him.
Yeah. I mean, I've just had a look to see who was actually covering it. And it's White Fox.
Yep. Which is another reason why I have some hope for it.
Yeah, because, I mean, looking at their history, we've got Steins Gate.
Yep.
Devil is a Part-Timer.
Yep.
ReZero.
Yep.
Girls Last Tour.
And let's be fair. The adaptation of ReZero and Girls Last Tour were very good.
Yeah. I mean, ReZero was probably the biggest thing coming out of 2016.
You see what I mean?
Except of Yuri and Ice, but...
And the other thing I like about Goblin Slayer is only a few of the characters actually have names.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are known by what they are, what job they do. So Goblin Slayer is literally called Goblin Slayer. You have a girl at the guild who is called Guild Girl. You have a priestess. You have a priestess who is called Priestess. Goblin Slayer's best friend is a girl who works with cows, so she is naturally called Cowgirl.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the light novel. We've got Cowgirl, Goblin Slayer, Priestess, Guild Girl, High Elf Archer, Dwarf Shaman, Lizard Priest. That's kind of generic, really, isn't it?
Very simplistic.
Yeah. But the thing is, White Fox have also done Akame ga Kill.
Yeah.
Right?
The Order is a Rabbit,
yeah. Grimoire of Zero. Jormungand. I actually do like Jormungand as a series because I think it's a very interesting series. It's got a lot more to say for itself than a lot of people give it credit for. Have you guys seen it?
I don't know.
Did you like, say, Black Lagoon?
Yeah.
Then you're probably going to like Jormungand.
Ooh.
It's not as heavy-hitting, it's not as action-packed as Black Lagoon, but it's kind of... I wouldn't be surprised if Black Lagoon and Jormungand were kind of in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Jormungand, if the characters in Jormungand, if Coco from Jormungand, if at some point she hired the Lagoon Company to do a transport run.
Right.
Katanagatari, which I absolutely adore and is the best of the Monogatari franchise. I don't care how many Bakemonogatari fans there are out there. You can go take a running jump. If you haven't seen Katanagatari, then you really haven't seen the best of the Monogatari franchise. And no, it's not part of Bakemonogatari. It is separate.
So it's not part of the Monogatari franchise?
No, it is part of the Monogatari franchise. It's just not part of Bakemonogatari.
Oh.
That's the thing that people misunderstand. The fact that it has Gatari in it, it signifies that Nisio Isin classified it as part of the Monogatari franchise. It's just not part of Bakemonogatari.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I am noticing that the people who's going to do Goblin Slayer, White Fox,
yep,
they are doing Peacemaker Kurogane.
They're doing films, a remake, aren't they?
Which leads me on to a review.
Oh, because was this the movie they did?
They are actually doing two movies for it.
Wow. And that was a great segue,
this
Mark.
Year and then later on this year. Yeah,
that was a great segue. Tucky, you're under the cosh here, Tucky. You have to do an amazing segue.
That was like the most amazing segue ever because I actually didn't realise they were doing this until I've just Googled it just like about 10 minutes ago and we started talking about this. So yeah, I've been watching Peacemaker Kurogane and Jesus Christ, it's the most average thing I've ever watched.
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
It's Naruto before Naruto was a thing.
It is.
Honestly, this is like the kind of plucky young kid does things that is popular. I mean, we've had pirates, we've had ninjas, demon slayers. Let's have samurai. That's basically what Peacemaker Kurogane is. I mean, the main character, I don't even remember his name, Tetsu.
Yeah.
He's just another Naruto, really. It's just a kid who has a kind of vague goal in life.
Isn't it the other way around, though? Isn't it fairer to say that he's basically the model that Naruto was built on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's face it, this was 2003, so One Piece and Naruto already existed. Maybe not the anime, but the manga did.
Okay, so this is the manga version of this, then. Is there a manga version of this?
Yeah. There always is. Unless it's a light novel. This is one of those series. I mean, I got into this series because it's advertised as a samurai series full of revenge and violence and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is one of those series that kind of advertises like violence, it advertises revenge. But honestly, there's 24 episodes of this series and about 21 of those episodes is just kind of like the kid just doing random things every episode.
So it's not Rurouni Kenshin by any measure?
Oh, dear God, no. That's on another level than that. This follows a character called Tetsu.
Yeah.
I don't remember his first name. I don't think it's even really mentioned. He's trying to avenge his parents.
I can tell you his full name.
Yeah?
His full name is Tetsunosuke Ichimura. And his older brother / guardian is Tatsunosuke Ichimura.
So yeah, I mean, you see his older brother, you see other people in his kind of, like, adoptive family. But, honestly, nothing happens in this series. I mean, to be honest, the most interesting character I found in the series was the mute girl. Because she conveyed more emotion being not being able to talk than characters who could talk could.
Yeah.
Honestly, nothing happens in this series. I was expecting the second half to be more exciting than the first half, but it just kind of just continued to just kind of like, oh, well, this episode, there's a festival, and he's going to go to the festival. Nothing's going to happen.
Festival episodes. I watched, like, the first episode, and I got, like, Yeah, it's just like him shouting like he wants to join the Shinsengumi, like the police force or something.
Yeah, the Shinsengumi.
Yeah, and I immediately thought, oh, it's Gintama. But yeah. it was not as entertaining as Gintama.
Pretty much. There's very little to the series.
When you say it's bland, is it unwatchable?
No.
Okay.
This is 24 episodes. I managed to get through these 24 episodes in about 4 days. It's one of those series you can stick on in the background and do other things. You can enjoy it for what it is. Like it says, the mute character, the girl, she is always interesting to watch. The family, they're kind of interesting to watch. They're not, like, perfect, but it's one of those series where you can enjoy it when you've got it in the background. If you're sitting there watching it, you'll just be bored to death like Tucky was, to be honest. Like I said, it feels like Naruto or Bleach or One Piece, where it's trying to be like the plucky young kid, only with a samurai setting. It doesn't end up like that. It doesn't end up as interesting as any of those series. It's not a bad series. You can sit and you can watch it and you can enjoy it for what it is. It's just background noise, more or less. And that's probably the best thing I can say about it. I mean, there's some characters, there's one character where you just basically go on to the enemy to have sex with them and get information. She was quite an interesting character, but that's probably the most interesting part of the series. She gets killed off, and then they have a whole arc about her brother kind of stepping up into her position. Not literally that position. I'm not saying that the brother starts sleeping with guys or anything like that. But it's just kind of, they kind of introduce a lot of plot threads where they kind of don't resolve them.
Yeah.
And that's all it feels like. They introduce a lot of interesting things, but they don't go anywhere with any of them. And like, to be honest, it was like, there's 24 episodes in this, and episode 24, I was kind of like, oh, this has ended. Oh, well. Oh. I kind of felt that they kind of thought this was going to be more popular than it was. And it was going to continue and continue and continue, much like Naruto or Bleach or One Piece. But it didn't. And it feels very unfinished.
Yeah.
And when we talk about series where they've got 12 episodes or 13 episodes compared to 24 episodes, this is the series I'm going to point at and say, this is why we only have 12 episodes for series now. Unless they're exceptionally good and they get 24 episodes. Because this had 24 episodes and it did nothing with them.
Yeah, I kind of have to disagree with you there, because the fact that it has 24 episodes and did nothing with them, fair enough. But the problem I have is that there are great stories out there that deserve way more than 12 episodes, but they compact everything. They cram it all into 12 episodes.
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel like there's a lot of series that could do with a lot more. There's nothing off the top of my head. I mean,
I have something off the top of my head.
Something like Prison School. There's a lot of others that...
I don't know about Prison
School. Oh, this is ending for now, but it's because of series like this.
Yeah.
I can't get 24 episodes.
I mean, what kind of show is it? Is it meant to be a slice of life or something like that?
It kind of feels more like it's supposed to be a shonen, but it doesn't really amount to a shonen.
But is it slice of life?
See, I wouldn't even say a slice of life, because it's set in the period it is. It doesn't feel like a slice of life. I mean, there is some episodes where he's just going out with the mute girl, or he's interacting with other characters. I mean, this is one of the issues. So many characters are introduced and they do nothing with them. There is a lot of episodes like that.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Mark. I'm just basically playing devil's advocate and trying to figure out. Because I watched this years ago, and I'll be honest, it wasn't very memorable for me either. I actually found it quite bland. I could never figure out whether it was supposed to be a slice of life with shonen elements, or whether it was just trying to be a combination of several things and nothing.
Yeah, I think it's trying to be the next One Piece. It's trying to be the next Naruto. I think I kind of looked at seeing what they were doing and trying to incorporate that.
Yeah.
It just falls flat on them.
Yeah, because the manga for this only ran for like 2 years.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm quite surprised that they're doing films for it.
Again, we come back to that nostalgia thing.
Was this popular enough to have nostalgia for it, though?
It was popular enough to have Vic Mignogna as the older brother, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an ADV presentation. I mean, to be honest, the main character is Lucy Christensen, and she's probably one of my more favourite voice actors. Can't fault her, to be honest. There's some cheesiness aspect to the voice acting. Overall, it's pretty decent, though.
Yeah.
But, to be honest, this is one of those series that I've mentioned to a few people, and they're just like, what? Never heard of it. Whereas Chronicle Crusade, which we discussed last week, that had the nostalgia. That was one of those series, I mean, I personally didn't grow up with it, but I knew of it when I first got into anime, when I first got into stuff like Full Metal Panic.
Yeah.
I knew Chronicle Crusade. I did not know of Peacemaker Kurogane, even though that was around the same time.
Again, we come back to it. That's how you can gauge whether something's actually worth giving a try. When you first get into anime, what are the things that that people are talking about? And this is one of the reasons why, even though I'm not a big fan of, say, Code Geass or Death Note, I actually got challenged on Code Geass again recently. Somebody was asking me why I rated it a 6, so I explained to them, you know, you've got this character here who's effectively paranoid, so he's really good at planning. I know that from experience. And so they've given him this power, and he hasn't tested it all fully before he puts any kind of plan into action, which is not what he would do as a character. You basically took this character who was actually really interesting and you ruined him.
Yeah, he's a lot more methodical than they make him out to be, like.
Yeah.
Yes, it's one of those series that when I was trying to get back into watching anime, that got us back into it, but I've never had the desire to watch it again.
That's because they made the main character, they made Lelouch. Lelouch v. Britannia wants revenge. And he's cold, he's calculating, he's meticulous, and he's also paranoid as hell. Oh, holy hell. Pardon my phrasing, he's paranoid as fuck, right? He sees shadows targeting him at every turn, and so he's really good at planning and laying low. So if you give him any sort of ability, I mean, he showed it when he was using his gas on those various people and testing what they were doing, right? He would have asked CC, or 2C, however you pronounce her name, I don't care. He would have asked her, can this power go out of control? What happens if I lose control? He would have asked her that point blank, because that would have been one of the first things that he would have asked her. And then you wouldn't have had that whole murder princess bit, which resulted in his best friend turning against him and all of that jazz. And oh, hey, look.
Yeah, I mean, Code Geass is one of those series. First series, fine. Second series,
And that's because they basically made a mockery of the character in the first series, and they couldn't redeem it after that. If they'd basically followed through on Lelouch and basically made him out to be the character that his personality and his behaviours really cried out for him to be, it could have been a much more interesting series. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about something else.
But yeah, Peacemaker. Honestly, I mean, I picked this up for, I think, £15. I'm happy with paying £15 for it.
Fair enough.
It's not the best anime. You're going to get enough to warrant your money for it. That's about as much as I can see it. It's not the best. It's not the worst. It's kind of going to be resolving something that you've watched. That's basically what you can say for it. It's something that you've watched.
Yes. Now, Mark, I want you to do something for me. I want you to open a window because I think the glue fumes are getting to you.
Definitely.
Because I've noticed you start going, wash, you need to wash this.
Wash it. You don't need to wash Peacemaker Kurogane. No.
Anyway. while Mark opens the window, we shall have a quick check of the rest of the house. Yes, there are walls. Yes, there are doors. But is there a gate? Yes, there is.
Oh, dear.
Oh, come on, man. No. Am I supposed to live up to this kind of pressure?
Sorry, Chucky. I couldn't resist. Gate, to give it its full title, Gate, thus the JSDF fought there. Because the full title in Japanese is Gate Jietai Kanochi Nite Tatakairi. And that literally translates to, get thus the Japanese Self-Defense Force fought there. And it's a light novel series, fantasy light novel series, written by Takumi Anai with the illustrations by Daisuke Iizuka and Kurajishi. And it was started in 2006, so 12 years ago, right? Manga adaptation came out in 2011, which was illustrated by Satoru Sao. And it's got three spin-off manga that started in 2015. And it has two anime series, both of which are about 12 episodes long. And this is the thing. The anime series, done by A1 Pictures, so pretty good company did the work on it. But when it came out, I had an issue with it. And it was one of my early experiences with light novel adaptations of something that I've quite enjoyed and has actually been quite interesting from a certain perspective. Because Gate tells the story of a gate to another world appearing in the middle of Tokyo. And it appears on just a normal day, and from this gate come all sorts of Romanesque-style soldiers on horseback and just infantry, and there's monsters that appear with them, and they're all invading, and they basically start killing people at random. The JSDF basically get called in, they fight back, and they eventually regain control of the area. If I remember rightly, the area that this happens in is Ginza, and so the JSDF form this borderline there and go check through the gate, and they find themselves in another world. And so they build a bridgehead there, and there is a battle that's fought at the bridgehead, and the other side loses because modern military versus Romanesque-style military, let's say.
When you say Romanesque, is that just like a legion?
It's kind of a cross between medieval knights and Roman legions, kind of combined.
Okay, I get you.
Do you see what I mean? So you have the knights in armor on horseback with the lances from medieval times, but then you have the Romanesque-style legions as well. It's kind of a combination of things, and there is an empire on the other side which has opened this gate to another world to basically claim resources and claim people as slaves and everything like that, and so Japan obviously fights back. Now, this gate has basically made big news all over the world, and so what you have in the story, you have politics at play in the background, so politics between Japan and other countries like America and Russia and China, who all want a piece of this pie, because the gate opens up to a completely untouched world. There are natural resources there that could basically make Japan the biggest superpower in the world, and all the major superpowers of the world want in. Japan basically is treating everything with kid gloves. And there is a commentary in the manga and in the light novel about this, but it didn't actually make it into the anime, and I thought it was a crying shame that it didn't, because they talk about the previous war and Japan's stance in the previous war and how they've changed how they view things now. And I thought that's a very telling thing to say, but it didn't make it into the anime, and I don't know why. Because Japan's self-defense now, it only acts in self-defense until recently. Recent votes in the Japanese diet being a thing. This starts off with a 33-year-old member of the JSDF. He's a soldier, and he's an otaku called Yoji Itami. And he was on scene at Ginza, and he was helping people, and he got a citation for it, and he becomes part of the group that goes across to this other world. And he's basically, nobody can understand why he's actually in the army. Nobody actually understands this. And there are some great bits involving Itami, some great comedy bits involving Itami, because Itami is very far from being the perfect soldier. He's not a meathead. He's not into his guns and ammo. He doesn't have, like, back issues of various weapon magazines under his bed or anything like that. He's the commanding officer, the member of his third recon unit, who is the tiny, overly stacked Shino Kurabayashi. She is the typical soldier, the meathead, everything like that. She's basically that character. And I love the idea that he's so totally not soldier material, but she totally is.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Amaki Brilliant Park, where she was obviously the soldier type character, whereas he was the kind of normal guy, kind of.
Yeah. Itami is basically an otaku, and he wears his hat on his sleeve. Everybody knows he's an otaku. Everyone knows he'd rather read web novels on his phone under a tree than go out on patrol or something like that. And so yeah. And this is the thing, he gets promoted, and he keeps getting promoted. He doesn't understand why. And the reason why is because at one point he said to one of his commanding officers, he was talking about ant colonies, and he said, in an ant colony, a certain percentage of the ants are slackers, which encourages the rest of the ants to work hard. And they've proven if you remove the slackers from the ant colony, from the what's left, the same percentage of ants will become slackers. So, from the military's perspective, they keep Itami on being an active slacker because it encourages the rest of the army to actually work harder.
And I love, it's a good logic.
Yeah, the thing is, I love the logic to it. And this is what I mean. It's got great logic to the story design in the light novel and in the manga, which unfortunately hasn't quite translated to the anime. And one of the reasons for that is because they do a lot of edits on the anime. They do a lot of cutting and they do a lot of kind of scene transitions and stuff like that to make it more interesting than it actually is, which is a shame because we were talking about Peacemaker Kurogane having a 24-episode run when it shouldn't have had a 24-episode run, whereas Gate is one of those ones where they could have taken the first 12 episodes and done easily 16 episodes on them. It doesn't have to be a full 24. It could have been 16 to 18 episodes on them. 18 episodes, yeah, easily. And then done another 18 episodes on the second series. And that would have really fleshed out the story. It would have really allowed the characters to develop more in the anime and develop in the way that they should have done according to the light novel and the manga. Because they do develop in a lot of ways in the light novel and the manga, but instead they crammed a lot of story into 24 episodes, and it's a lot of story that doesn't fit into 24 episodes. I mean, it's literally bursting at the seams. It's spilling out all over the place into the streets and everything like that.
Yeah.
There's one bit in the manga and in the light novel when Itami brings refugees back. I'll talk about the dub and the production in a minute, but this is also one of the bits that kind of got glossed over. It had to do with the culture of Japanese people, and I love this bit as well. Basically, they need people. They've got people now who settled in the area of the military base, and so the area is called Alnus. And so they basically start building a town and everything like that, but they need more people to come and help out. So they ask the nearest town, which is a place that they save from being attacked, called Italica, and they send people over. They send a bunch of people over, and these people are basically... They're, let's put it this way, cat-eared women, and rabbit-eared women, and, you know...
Cat girls.
Cat girls, rabbit girls, various people like that, various characters like that. There are wolfmen and all sorts. So they all start piling into Alnus, and they're all living together happily and messed in together. And obviously, the Japanese like this, so more of the Japanese soldiers spend more time in the Alnus community, which means more money gets traded, more merchants come over, which means you need more people to come and help, so more of these people come over, which means even more soldiers spend time there, and so the cycle continues. And it was basically saying, look, this is just what Japanese people enjoy. Itami has a subordinate who's heavily into anthropomorphic characters. And so...
Furry.
The thing about the light novel and the manga, which isn't shown as well in the anime, and... This is one of the reasons why I say it needed a longer series. It shows the kind of cultural aspect of Japanese pop culture, right? And how it's had a massive effect on just Japanese society in general, and how that's applied in a world where all of these things that they imagined for years actually exist. Do you see what I mean? And so that's an aspect of it, that's an undertone of it that hasn't really translated well to the anime. The production of it, the character designs, obviously, they don't need talking about because they're taken from the manga and the illustrations for the light novels. There's not really much you can do about them. The character designs are basically what I expected, and they've done a really good job on the environments and everything like that. The design of the characters from the Empire and the fantasy creatures, they're actually really good. The use of CG is a little shonky. I'll be honest, it has to do with all of those transitions that they keep putting in, and you know, everything kind of has a bit of a slapdash effect at times. But overall, it's eminently watchable. A lot more so than Arch Enemy and Hero, and Knights and Magic, and various things like that. Which leads me on to the dub. And this is where I begin to have problems. The Japanese dub, leave that to one side, that's perfectly fine as it is. But when you come to the English dub, I'm curious how a dub can be both good and bad at the same time.
Right.
Because it doesn't make sense to me. How can you have an English dub that is both good and bad at exactly the same time.
I have to elaborate on it.
Right. David Wald plays the role of Itami, and he's great as Itami, right? Got no bad words to say about him. He's really good playing a 33-year-old otaku soldier. Jessica Boone plays Pina Colada. You got Juliet Simmons playing Tuka. You got Brittany Karbowski playing Lele Lalena. Her name always gives me trouble. Molly Searcy plays Rory Mercury, and she's actually very good as Rory Mercury. You got Rachel Landon playing Yao Hadushi. Again, pretty decent. Members of the Third Recon Unit, Shino Kurabayashi is played by Stephanie Whittles. Kurata is played by Tyler Gallando. Various others. Alison Sumrell plays Mari, and Adam Gibbs plays Furuta. You've got loads of great characters. Akira Yanagida is played by Chris Patton in this, and I recognise his voice straight away. He's like a first lieutenant who serves as an aide to the general. He doesn't like Itami. Well, they say that he doesn't like Itami. Him and Itami have known each other for a while, and so he's used to Itami's behaviour. He knows how Itami thinks, and so he knows that there are certain things that Itami will do, and he knows also how to play Itami like a fiddle. So when you see articles saying this character doesn't like Itami, you're like, no, that's not the case. Just read the light novels. You'll understand they have this weird relationship. I mean, it's like Itami's relationship with the head of the Ministry of Defense, right? Itami actually has a relationship, and this is one of the bits that I think they could have elaborated on in the anime. They did touch on it. They do touch on the fact that Itami is so totally not the warrior type, which is why Kurabayashi flips out when she finds out that Itami has the ranger badge. And she has to explain to Rory and Tuka what being a ranger means. They have like bodies forged of steel. Their minds are totally concentrated on the task at hand. They travel for miles carrying equipment weighing like tens of kilos. And
so like the French Legion in a way.
Yeah, they're like the French Foreign Legion in a way. And Rory and Tuka are basically imagining Itami as this ultimate warrior type person, and they both start pissing themselves while they're trying to sneak up on a castle. Because Itami doesn't fit it. And then later on, they actually finish the joke off in two ways. Number one, by telling Kurabayashi that Itami isn't just a ranger, he's also a member of the Special Forces. And that information gets to the head of the Ministry of Defense, who's in a situation room, because there is a situation going on at the time, and he says to the general in charge of the army, he says, I didn't know Itami was a member of the Special Forces. Like, well, we put him in there as a joke, but he kind of passed because no one could find him. And the... because he's really good at hiding. And the minister looks at him and says, so what does that say about the Special Forces then? The fact that they were beaten by a 33-year-old otaku.
Not that special.
that's my point. And that joke, unfortunately, hasn't translated that well into the anime. It's one of those bits where if they'd expanded on it a little bit and given it a bit more time, it would have worked. But still.
We're going on about the dub actors and that. You kind of went off track with that because you had a gripe about one of the dub actors.
It's not one of the dub actors I have a gripe about. It's the bloody script.
So it's a script writer then.
Yeah. This is why I say the dub can be both good and bad at the same time. The actors are great because most of the characters in this are adults, right? And so they're not people having to put on a fake voice to pretend that they're a teenager. They're basically playing the role of adults. So David Wald has a naturally deep voice, and he's voicing the character of Itami, doing it really well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Molly Searcy playing the role of Rory? Rory is basically, she's 900 plus years old, but she's basically been like a teenage girl for 900 years. And so her voice, she plays it well. She carries the role quite well. But unfortunately, what they've done, they've basically taken what was in the subtitles of the Japanese dub and basically said, okay, we'll apply this here. Instead of using a bit of common sense and saying, okay, would this be used in modern vernacular? Would somebody who's part of the military be saying these particular words, or would they use maybe this word instead, you know, which is more modern?
Uh-huh.
Do you see what I mean? And so when you hear the voice actors pronouncing words that you would find in fantasy, but you wouldn't find a modern person saying them because, well, it's a bit like, you know, the these and thous and for as muches and stuff like that. I swear, by the I forswear. You know, you wouldn't have a squaddy suddenly quoting Shakespeare, would you?
No.
Unless they were a very educated squaddy. And that's the point I'm making. This is the problem with the dub, is that every so often, the script, the dialogue that's written, the actors deliver it really well. But the dialogue itself, what they're saying, pulls you right out of your enjoyment. Because you go, that sounds a bit weird. That sounds a bit wrong. I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
I also have one other gripe about this. Who the hell has an open cup of coffee in an attack helicopter while they're in the middle of an attack?
Everybody.
So, yeah, Gate.
Oh, they're in the attack helicopter.
I'll say one thing for Gate, right? It's better than Arch Enemy and Hero in terms of what it is. You've got two series to actually get to grips with the story, and it does give you a nice overview of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably will make you want to go on and watch the manga, read the manga or read the light novel. And if you want to do that, more power to you. Gate is out this month, if I remember rightly, from MVM, and it's two series in one set. It's all done as one release, so I like the fact that they've done that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tucky.
Are you ready? Right, so we're taking from one gate to the gate of truth.
Oh!
Metal Alchemist. Been sitting on that one for about half an hour now. I've delved into Netflix. I say delved, I mean, I've just subscription. Sorry. And we've went into the world of live action anime once again, and this is for the live action anime adaptation of Full Metal Alchemist. Metal Alchemist is this big series that was really popular, and I think it was actually voted one of the best series of all time at some point.
I think on my anime list, it's still one of their most popular series, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So there's a huge fan base for it.
Actually, it's still the most popular series on my anime list. It's number one. Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood is anyway.
Yeah, there you go. So this is a huge series, and if anything's to go by from live action adaptations, recently we've did Tokyo Ghoul, we've also seen like Dragon Ball Evolution, Parasite, you know, Attack on Titan. So the live action,
do not mention Attack on Titan.
Well, I had to. It's not went well in the past, let's say. But after watching this, and it's quite a lengthy one. It's like just over 2 hours.
2.5 hours or so, isn't it?
Yeah, I was surprised I was surprised at how long it was. Ooh, Mrs.
But yeah, so 2 hours, so it's quite a substantial amount of your time that you're going to have to invest in it. And this is for me what I believe to be the turning point for live action anime wars or movies or what have you. Follow the blueprint of what Full Metal Alchemist have laid down. And this one's been hyped for a while, and I was actually quite surprised to see it on Netflix. I'm actually kind of surprised that Netflix is going in that direction to start with at all.
Okay.
I know they invested a lot more in anime, but actually, like, turn around and say, oh, we'll have the live action one as well, just fling that in the package. Looking at Netflix and the live action adaptations, they don't really have a good track record with going for the live action Death Note.
Yeah.
Turned out so wrong. But live action Full Metal Alchemist, it's a different kettle of fish. L is the costume design. It's like proper high quality cosplay standard.
Okay, yeah.
They've looked at the source material right down to Lust's cleavage.
Yeah, I noticed
like
that.
It's absolutely nailed on. I cannot knock it at all or pick faults where a costume design. The special effects.
Hang on, I just want to clarify. Are you saying that Lust's knockers are nailed on?
No, I'm saying they are nailed on.
And that you're not knocking the fact that her knockers are nailed on.
And there's some kind of dodge joke here. I don't know. it sounds very sexist if I say knockers. They're her breasts, her cleavage.
No, her cleavage and her breasts are two separate.
How can I say it without offending people?
her cleavage and her breasts are two separate things.
Which part? The upper part of the breast, the upper boob. Why don't they call that upper boob? Because you've got under boob. Why can't you have upper boob?
I don't know.
Things that you think of in the shower.
This is not Jeopardy. This is not Jeopardy.
What is getting arrested? Right, so the plot is fantastic, and this is the one thing that every live-action anime adaptation goes awry with, because it deviates too much from the story, and you'll end up with a storyline that you don't recognise, and it's like, it never took over. I've never watched the show before. They had to fit a lot of it in, but they managed so well with it. Their job was, I think, how many episodes is it? Like 64 or something for the original?
Yeah, it's about
it was 50 plus episodes for the original, and I think it was 64 for the Brotherhood.
Right, so it's quite a lot of episodes to pack down in. What they've done is they've taken the storyline and cut it into more manageable chunks.
Yeah.
What follows, like, the beginning, like, they try to bring their mother back, meet the pastor, then they go on the look for the Philosopher's Stone.
Mm. The story ends...
At the death of Maes Hughes. What comes in between that is they've fit in quite a lot, and it means they've had to ignore some characters.
Yeah.
So we miss out on live-action Armstrong, which, it's like, ooh, Armstrong, I can't wait to say that, so... There's no guy built like a brick shit house with a weird mustache kind of guy with these sparkles.
I'm just going to try and interject. So people were upset about no Armstrong.
But people are always upset. The thing is, you can't please anime fans, especially in this day and age. As soon as it was announced and the first like pictures of the characters, people were like, oh, I already hate it. Oh, they're going to ruin it. Oh, it's going to be Dragon Ball Evolution. And you're going to get that a lot, but people need to give this a chance.
Yeah.
Like I say, the thing is, like, they've cut out Mustang's miniskirt fetish. You know, they've cut out all the fluff, all of like the, you know, the point is, sure, it's took away some of the humour, but it's turned it into a storyline where you can actually feel that it's serious. It's a serious Full Metal Alchemist. And you get the emotion, like the whole thing between Ed and Al, like where Al believes that Ed's just implanted memories. Winry's standing to the side for some reason, screaming. You know, he's definitely your brother. He loves you. And like I say, the plot, it follows the original like material down to a T. Apart from it's cut out all the fluff. It's streamlined it. It's compacted it. It's put it in a zip file ready for WinRAR. And that's the plot. Fantastic. Like I say, they're fitting so much in. They managed to get the character development down, and the characters, the casting is fantastic. You could believe to be the actual anime version of it. So Gluttony, you've got the short, fat bloke who'll eat anything.
Yeah.
They cast some guy, looks like he eats as much as him. You can't knock that kind of authenticity. The same goes with Lust, the same goes with Envy, Mustang, Maes Hughes, Risa Hawkeye. The whole lot of them is absolutely spitting dubs of the... And that's one of the things that people were most worried about, because it is based as like more of a European, and the whole race issue comes in again. It's like, oh, what are they using Japanese characters for when it's like based in Europe?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things we're always going to have to deal with now, is anytime there's a live-action anime adaptation, you're going to have somebody complaining about the race of the characters. It's a shame, and it's a pain in the arse, and I think they should just let people do what people do. And if it turns out all right, the point in like whinging over race. It's 2018, man.
This is true.
That's the characters that they've got the famous
Edward.
Oh, the famous suit of armor with Ed's soul in it.
Ed's soul, the little girl's soul, and shout up her.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry. The suit of armor's got Alphonse's soul in, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's as, like, maddening as it is in the anime or the manga. And the way they've done the Chimera that they've used looks exactly like me. It's just... The thing is, he absolutely wails on Shoutucker. every punch you're going, yes, God, I leave no teeth. And it's one of the things, like, with the anime, you felt like that them genuine feelings rose up because it was such like an emotive thing. And for them to transfer that over to live action, one of them, it shows how well they've done. And that you've already seen, you know it's coming.
Yeah.
They're off at the end. And just seeing it in live action, again, it actually feels a lot better seeing them beat the crap out of them. The whole part of it, it's so well done. And they've now got, and Scar doesn't feature in it. I think Scar will make an appearance in the next one. They've got to do another one. They finished it at the death of Mears Hughes. The revenge that they get for him. And they end up finishing off Lust. And Gluttony slinks off like, oh no, they've killed her. And now they've got to start with the funeral of Mears Hughes. But wrenching in itself, the whole, oh, it's beginning to rain and he's crying. But that's something I'd love to see if they do another movie, which if it's as good as this one, they definitely need to just start watching it, I believe.
Yeah.
What were your first impressions on it?
Yeah, it was all right. I didn't watch enough to get really much of an impression. I mean, I'm not a huge Full Metal Alchemist fan. I like it. It's not one of my favourites, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
I'm kind of the same. I thought the CG, the special effects were a lot better used in this than they were in, say, Dragon Ball Z. And
I mean, it was better than Tokyo Ghoul.
Lots of things about than Tokyo Ghoul. That's not really
saying much. Along with sandpaper and vinegar, it'd be better than Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah, it's not really saying much saying it's better than Tokyo Ghoul. You know, the new Dad's Army remake was better than Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah.
Thank you, I'm kidding, Mr. Ghoulie. There's a parody to be done there somewhere, if I only had the time.
Yep.
I think at this moment in time, that's Full Metal Alchemist, that's so good, that comes after or before, will be compared to it until we get something better.
Yeah.
Fair point. Right, so that's your lot for today then. We've had Peacemaker Kurogane and Gate. Thus, the JSDF's fought there, and the live-action version of Full Metal Alchemist, which we may come back and talk about more in the future.
Yeah, so my next live-action we do, it's going to be compared against this Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, you know, watch it. The listeners out there, you know, get yourselves on Netflix, make sure you watch it. But, you know, if you like it, I sent you.
Excellent. Wink. Right, so that's it from Keyframe for this week. We are available on Apple Podcasts and Audio Boom. So show your support and subscribe us. If you want to show some different type of support, then you can find our Patreon links on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, and on Google. Just look for us. You can also get in touch with us on Facebook or on our own Twitter, which is Mark.
At Keyframe Podcast.
That's your lot for this week. We'll see you all next week. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been Tucky.
All right, we'll see you all later.
Bye!